You're listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome. In these podcasts, we explore crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer, and I specialize in food and science. Today's podcast is about the future of personalized nutrition. Following the recent findings from PREDICT, the latest detailed study into the gut microbiome, we catch up with Dr. Sarah Berry, reader in nutritional sciences from King's College London. Hello there, Sarah.
Hi, Stefan.
Now, you're one of the leads on the project, so we're going to find out what the latest research means for our understanding of the gut microbiome. It's a hugely exciting and promising area that could help us improve our health by changing the way we eat. Now, the PREDICT study you've worked on alongside Tim Spector, he's Professor of Genetic Epidemiology at King's College London. He's been a guest on this podcast a couple of times. Can you, first of all, just tell us a little bit about the PREDICT study? What is it? What is it looking for?
Absolutely. So it's actually part of a whole program of research consisting of a number of PREDICT studies. So the PREDICT 1, the PREDICT 2, and the PREDICT 3 studies. We recently completed and published two papers in Nature Medicine on the PREDICT 1 study, which I think is, like you said, what we'll talk mainly about today, particularly in relation to the microbiome. But there is a lot more to come from our PREDICT 2 and PREDICT 3 work as well. So the PREDICT 1 study was specifically designed to answer really three key questions that are really important and particularly timely now in the whole landscape of where nutritional research is going. And this was to look at how much variability there is in how people respond to food, which is around this whole area of precision nutrition and personalized nutrition. And then secondly, to look at what's determining this variability between individuals and also within an individual, i.e. day to day. So is it due to our genes? Is it due to our microbiome? Is it due to our age? Is it due to what we're eating? Or is it due to how we're eating? You know, what time of day we eat, sleep, etc. And then thirdly, can we predict our responses to food? So can we use some really novel technologies, use machine learning and AI to actually build prediction models to predict for each individual person how they might respond to a given food? And quite uniquely in terms of research, it combines very traditional academia, so researchers like myself, and then Zoe, who are a startup tech company who are formed specifically for the purpose of these PREDICT studies. Because of the scale and the breadth of the study and this multidisciplinary team that I mentioned, unlike other studies, which can tend to be very narrow in their approach when they're trying to look at how different variables might affect our responses to food, our PREDICT studies explore the many interrelated determinants of how we respond to food, as well as the many different outcomes. So, for example, we've looked at all the pieces of the puzzle as to how we eat impacts our response, what we eat impacts our response, who we are impacts our response, our genes and our microbiome. And we've measured this using a very robust dietary human study and the most advanced technologies and multi-omics to get really in-depth data that we can then use to answer this last question and start to predict how we respond to food.
Now, these concepts of precision nutrition and personalized nutrition have been bandied around in various pseudoscientific terms by sofa nutritionists. This is not what you're doing here, is it? Can you tell us a bit about your role?
Yeah, totally. So I think perhaps I could just start by really outlining how I view precision nutrition and explaining the term in this non-pseudoscience way to then be able to put into context what I'm doing on the project. So really simply put, precision nutrition is about nutrition tailored to the individuals. And we're at a really, really exciting time, I think, in the evolution of nutritional research, where we're starting to realise that we need to look beyond the average response. We need to look beyond this one-size-fits-all recommendation. And we need to target nutritional advice at an individual level. And this is because we as humans are really complicated with our thousands of metabolic pathways, and food is really complicated with the thousands of chemicals in each and every food. And if we throw these together, we see that everyone responds hugely differently to the same food. But nutritional research has typically reported the mean response, and guidelines are typically based on the average person at a population level. And so I think, you know, more and more we're seeing nutritional researchers, and this also is the case across, you know, medicine as a whole. We're really realizing we need to look beyond the immune response. We need to strive to deliver advice at an individual level. And to do this, we really must explore just how different our responses are to food and what determines these differences. And this is what I'm doing as part of my role, in the PREDICT study. This research has really come about from a chance meeting between Tim Spector, who you mentioned earlier, and founders of Zoe, George and Jonathan. You know, their combined passion for improving people's health and ensuring that everyone eats for their unique biology was really the kind of idea behind the study. And I got involved really early on in the process. In the early days, I took a lead alongside Tim in the development of the protocol, really building on my own expertise in the last 20 years in the design and implementation of dietary randomized controlled trials, and also my expertise in postprandial metabolism. And my current role in the PREDICT program spans across all aspects of the studies, alongside a really world-class team of other scientists, ranging from scientists at King's College in the States, at MGH, Harvard and Stanford, and also in Italy at Trento, and in Sweden at Lund universities. And currently I work on the study design and the implementation of new PREDICT studies, but really importantly also on the interpretation of the results in the context of how we can actually apply this amazing data set we've got to achieve personalised dietary advice that we can actually use and can actually be actionable. And I think this is the really tough part, because it's really important when we're thinking about personalised nutrition that we can develop advice and use our findings to actually result in accessible and simple advice at an individual level. And it's only then that we can actually achieve any sort of meaningful change in health.
And in case any of our listeners are wondering why this is such an exciting outcome, I mean, nutritional research is immensely complex, isn't it? You're having to look at health outcomes related to food intake over a long period of time, and to the exclusion of other. I mean, it's to do it at all is immensely difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really challenging running any kind of nutritional research studies that encompass breadth, depth, and scale. And I think we're actually at really exciting times in the field of nutritional research, because previously as nutritional researchers, we've had the choice really of doing quite small scale studies, but at very high precision. So these might be very small-scale randomized control trials, or we've had the option of running very large-scale studies, but with very low precision. So these would typically be our epidemiology studies, so our big population studies. And really, up until very recently, we've had to choose one approach or the other approach. But what's amazing as being a nutritional researcher at the current times is that with the development of all the novel technologies, whether these be mobile phone apps, remote testing abilities, for example, continuous glucose monitors, and also the growing area of citizen science. You know, everyone wants to know, how do I respond to food? What should I eat? You know, et cetera. We've actually got the opportunity now as nutritional scientists to be able to collect data at a high scale across a whole massive range of different outcomes, but also at depth and also at really high precision. And it's actually once we've collected this kind of data that we can actually really start to unravel all this complexity that I talked about how complicated we are as individuals, how complicated, you know, food is, and really, you know, unravel these many interrelated determinants of how we respond to food. And it's only then that we can actually make personalized nutrition a reality as well.
You said that the PREDICT is about understanding variability in response to food. When you talk about responses, what does that mean? Is it changes in gut flora? Is it health outcomes? What are those responses?
So there's a whole range of responses of how we respond to food. And typically we would separate them into what we call acute, so short-term responses, and chronic, what we would call long-term responses. Now, in our studies, we're measuring both of these. But what we're focusing on, particularly in the PREDICT studies, is what we call postprandial metabolism. And these are these acute short-term changes. And simply put, it's what happens to us when we metabolize a meal. And it's really a measure of the changes in metabolites circulating the blood over that very acute, so maybe a 2 to 8 hour period after eating. And this is something we've been particularly interested in focusing alongside many of these long-term measures, you know, such as the microbiome or measures about ourselves, whether it be our genetics, etc.
So just to be absolutely clear, the phrase postprandial metabolism means what happens to you after you've eaten a meal.
Definitely. So certainly. So postprandial means post-meal. And if you want, I can expand on why this is something that we're interested in and why I think it's an important area that we should focus on when we're trying to untangle how we respond to food.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can expand on the impact of it.
Yep. So this is something that I've spent most of the last 20 years of my research career looking at. And the reason that we're interested in postprandial metabolism is because we actually spend most of our day in the postprandial state. And what happens is when we consume a meal containing mixed nutrients, as most meals do, so containing fat, protein and carbohydrate, for example, we have an immediate rise in circulating metabolites. And the ones that we typically measure are glucose and triglycerides. And so when you have carbohydrates in a meal, what happens is you have a short, sharp rise in glucose, which we call glycemia, peaking around 30 minutes, returning to baseline around 2 hours. And then from the fat that's in the meal, you have this much slower, more prolonged rise in circulating triglycerides from the fat in the meal, which reaches a peak around maybe 4 hours and returns to baseline around 8 hours. Now, if you think of those two little peaks that I've described and you map those onto a typical eating day where we consume three main meals and maybe 2 to 3 snacks a day, what happens is therefore you're in this state of metabolic flux throughout the whole day. So you're having this continued short, sharp rise in glucose, this continued elevation of circulating triglycerides in the blood. And these changes are accompanied by changes in circulating mediators, so inflammatory mediators, a change in atherogenic lipids, for example, oxidative stress. And this is really important because the evidence is now showing us that these acute elevations in all of these circulating metabolites are actually independent risk factors for cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and may even predispose to obesity. So when we think about how we respond to food, it's really important that we think of these acute changes alongside many of these long-term changes, because based on my many years of research, I really believe that most of the long-term effects of food are actually due to these very short changes that we see during this postprandial period.
Now, in layman's terms, just to make this absolutely clear, if we understand the variability in responses to foods and we can plot what foods do to us, presumably we should be able to make us healthier or our health outcomes different. We should be able to suppress certain propensities to disease. I mean, the impact could be enormous, couldn't it?
I think so. I think that, you know, we need to be mindful of the place for broad population-based guidelines. But within that, there's enormous scope to optimize our health, and there's enormous scope for personalized nutrition. And I think that given that what we've seen with our PREDICT studies is that there's a huge variability in how people respond to food. So, for example, when we look at postprandial triglyceride or we look at postprandial glucose responses, we see that there's about a tenfold difference in how different people respond. So, Stefan, how you might respond to a particular food versus how I might respond is hugely variable. And this is even amongst people that are very healthy. And so we see this massive variability. And what we can then do is we can then start to look at what's determining this variability and how can we modify those determinants to really optimize the subsequent health measures. And I think it's once that we can unravel all of this, that we're in a really powerful position to really optimize people's health.
Now, we've started to see a few companies working on the basis of personalized nutrition, in the sense of you can send a stool sample off or breathe into a monitor. There are various different methods that people are suggesting. Are they really viable yet? Do we have enough understanding of how the microbiome works to be able to put any knowledge of what's in our microbiome to any use?
So I think there's two important points really to follow up on that. I think one point is that the microbiome is one piece of the puzzle. And I think the other point is that we're still in the relative infancy in terms of what we know about the microbiome.
And is Predict a study very much about the microbiome, or are there other elements that come into play in understanding metabolism?
What we know is that there's many pieces of the puzzle that determine how we respond to food and what determines our postprandial metabolism, as well as the long-term impact of food. Predict is focusing on all of the different variables. So we've looked at all of the pieces of the puzzle, and this is really important. And this is why we need to be also mindful, like you said, about the different tests that are out there that just look at genetics or just look at the microbiome. And so we know that the pieces of the puzzle that fit together to determine how we respond to food include aspects related to how we eat, so time of day, exercise, sleep, who we are, so our genetics, our sex, our age, our body composition, and then our microbiome. And it's important that we look at all of these pieces of the puzzle. And this is what we've been doing in Predict, that we've been looking at how each of these determinants impact each given outcome. And so how the microbiome is important in our postprandial lipemic response and how genetics might be important in our postprandial glycemic response. And once we can look at the relative importance of the different pieces of the puzzle, we can really strive to then give individual advice by targeting determinants that actually have the biggest impact on these different outcomes.
Now, that requires understanding of the data at a quite a deep level, doesn't it? Because at the moment, what you're saying to me sounds on one level like extraordinary complexity. On another level, it sounds like chaos. There are so many factors, there are so many variables, there's so many foods, so many health outcomes. Are you seeing within the data patterns so that it's not just, oh my God, there are so many different outcomes, but there are patterns that are traceable?
Yeah. So to be able to do this, we need scale, breadth and depth of data, which I know I've mentioned before, but this is key. So traditionally, a lot of studies might have focused on just a single determinant, i.e., you know, how does time of day affect a single outcome, i.e. your glycemic response? Mm. But actually, to be able to unravel how the relative impact of all of these determinants and how they impact all the different health measures, we need an enormous amount of data, like we're getting in the Predict studies. We need an enormous amount of measures, which we're also doing, but we also need it at the highest precision. And then we need to apply really advanced computational biology expertise. And this is where Zoe have come into play, because they have a whole team of data scientists that specialize in machine learning. And essentially, it organizes what you said could seem as a lot of chaos. So it takes these hundreds of different input variables. They go into this wonderful black box, I think, a bit of the machine learning, and you get sense coming out the other side. Now, I'm not a data scientist, so that's how I kind of think of it logically, that these amazing data scientists take this complexity to something that's actually logical and enables myself as a nutritional researcher to actually apply it to something meaningful at an individual level.
Yeah. Now, I know this is very complex and there are lots of different responses. Your response to a certain food might be very different to mine. But I wonder, you've been looking at this area for 20 years, is there anything from the results that has particularly surprised you? Any particular trend or fact or even something that you thought was a hard and fast connection that actually isn't?
What has surprised me is just how interrelated a lot of these determinants are, and how interdependent a lot of these determinants are, which makes it even more complex, as you alluded to earlier. I think something that I find particularly interesting and also quite empowering as a nutritional scientist is how little of our response is predetermined by our genes. So I was a child growing up in the 70s where the whole era of genetic discovery was coming about. And, you know, I remember being brought up and told by my mother, well, it's all in your genes. And actually what our research shows is how little of it is predetermined by our genes. And that's because we've been able to, like I said, look at the interrelated and multiple determinants. So we've been able to look at how much is due to our genetics versus these other factors. And the reason I think that's not just novel, but actually really exciting is because it shows, therefore, that our response to food is modifiable, that we do actually, as individuals, have control over how we respond to food, and we can really, therefore, optimize our health.
Now, this is revolutionary stuff, isn't it? Because, a lot of health has been assumed to be something that is pressed upon us by our bodies, by our history, as you say, by our genes. But personal accountability suddenly crops up its head and means that we, if we can change our health, then doesn't that mean that we sort of should, and that there are some rules that we will eventually almost have to obey if we want to function properly?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot more complex than, just thinking about what we eat in terms of how we respond to food beyond what we're looking at in the PREDICT studies in terms of the determinants. But if we think about how food is so much part of society, it's part of our culture, it has emotional and social interactions with how we eat. And so I think that there's a lot of barriers that even when we have the knowledge, this doesn't necessarily mean that we're therefore motivated, empowered, or able to make change. And I think that
includes things like that, like cultural, emotional, political, religious aspects, as well as the simple the complex microbiome responses.
Yeah, and I think, this is something that I think makes this kind of work quite exciting, because we're looking at just how variable our responses are and how many different factors can determine our response. We can advise people, okay, these are the key factors that are important for you. This is their relative importance in determining the response based on your unique biology and based on the health measure that we think you need to target the most. And then because we're not just saying one thing, we're not just saying, okay, you can't eat this or you need to change this food, because we will be able to give that kind of precision advice across a whole range of input factors, I guess is a good way to describe it. Someone can choose, depending on these other factors that we talked about, depending on these cultural and emotional factors, they can choose what it is they feel that they're able to change and what it is that they're motivated to change.
Now, what can you, Sarah, offer us in our new understanding about the microbiome?
So obviously you're aware it's a rapidly advancing area of research. And I think what we found in the PREDICT studies that is really advancing the area in is quite novel, is that we've identified a set of microbes in our gut that are associated with specific dietary patterns and foods, as well as health outcomes within the same study. And we've been able to split these microbes into a group of microbes, which we call good microbes, which are associated with healthy foods and dietary patterns and measures of good health, including measures such as lower body fat, lower inflammation, lower blood pressure, etc. on conversely, we identified a group of bad microbes, which are associated with unhealthy foods, unhealthy dietary patterns, and measures for health. So for the first time, what we've been able to do with our microbiome research within the PREDICT studies is create a microbiome signature of good and bad microbes.
And what is that? Is it possible to reduce that to a simple explanation?
Yeah. So this microbiome signature of good and bad microbes is a cluster of 15 good microbes associated with healthy foods, and favorable health outcomes, and 15 what we call bad microbes associated with unhealthy foods and unfavorable health outcomes. What we have found with the PREDICT study is that very little of our microbiome is predetermined by our genes. So just how I mentioned earlier on that our genes actually play only a small role in determining our postprandial responses to food, in the PREDICT study, we had predominantly twins. So this was conducted in the Department of Twins Research. And so we were able to tease apart the genetic contribution to the microbiome. And what we found interestingly, and this is a new finding, is that about 30% of our microbes are common between unrelated individuals, and about 34% are common between genetically identical twins. So that shows that actually our genes play only a small role in determining the composition of our microbiome, which again, as I mentioned earlier, I think is really empowering, because we know that the microbiome can be modified, and that just shows how little is predetermined by our genes. So it shows that what we can do now, we've identified these 15 good bugs and these 15 bad bugs, and we've identified what foods they're associated with. We can give a targeted dietary advice for people to increase the foods associated with the good bugs and reduce the foods associated with bad bugs, in the knowledge that the microbiome is highly malleable, that it will modify.
Now, what fascinates me about what you've just said is the concept of good and bad microbes. Now, I would say that nutritional scientists are normally very wary of using those terms. Do you feel that you now have enough information that you can now finally say talk about them in terms of good and bad? Or are you just simplifying things for an idiot like me?
So that's a really good question. Obviously, I'm far too polite to say that I'm simplifying for an idiot. We are simplifying to a certain extent because we haven't shown causality yet. So our study is a cross-sectional study. We have shown very clear associations, very strong associations. And the fact that these good bugs congregate with all sorts of healthy foods and all sorts of favorable health outcomes, it is very encouraging. But in order to show that there's a causal link, we would need to conduct randomized control trials where we modify someone's diet based on what we know about their current diet and these good or bad bugs, and then see how they modify these good or bad bugs, and then look at how their subsequent health measures are also modified.
And then you're back into the really complex end and very difficult end of nutritional research all over again, aren't you?
We are, but we do have, I think, the ability now, as I mentioned earlier, to be able to conduct these kind of studies at scale remotely. And this is something that's been a really big part of the learnings from the PREDICT studies, is that we've worked with a lot of new laboratories, technical companies to really advance our abilities to conduct these kind of studies remotely, so that we're not having to bring people into our metabolic units, spend absolute fortunes conducting these, put a lot of participant burden on people, so that we could, do postal microbiome samples, postal continuous glucose monitors, dry blood spots to look at a whole host of metabolomic variables, and then offer specific dietary advice and then follow them up over a period of time.
Well, I guess that brings me to my final question, really. What is next? What are what's the next stage of the study? What are we looking at for PREDICT 2 and 3? How are you going to apply the knowledge that you have?
So a lot has to come next from the series of the Predict studies. So the 1, 2, and 3 that I mentioned earlier, we have the richest data set in the world, really, on individualized responses to food. This depth of data, as well as the breadth and the scale, and also the precision that I talked about, will allow us to explore lots of new questions as they arise from each piece of analysis in real time. So, for example, we're finding that time of day and meal sequence is important, so we're now exploring that. And we're also delving a lot deeper into the detailed associations between individual foods and the microbiome. But ultimately, what we plan to do is to launch randomized controlled trials to demonstrate the efficacy of taking the personalized nutrition advice that we're generating from the Predict studies using our Zoe app and demonstrate its efficacy, but also to demonstrate the causality between the diet, the microbiome, and the health. And, you know, in all of these studies, we're going to continue to take advantage of these new technologies. We're going to continue to take advantage of this amazing data science and AI approaches so that we can really unravel the complexity of us as individuals and the complexity of food, so we can actually achieve actionable personalized advice to enhance health.
Well, I really look forward to finding out what happens with the next stage. And I really hope that we can talk again with you, Sarah, when you've got some more data to tell us about.
Thank you. I look forward to that.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been absolutely fascinating. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast brought to you by Food Matters. And you heard from Dr. Sarah Berry and me, Stefan Gates. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from waging war on plastics to clean eating. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.